he's a planet walker. Many of you may have heard of him if you have lived in and around the West Marin area. You may have heard of him. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story, about how all of this came about for him, his journey. And we spoke a little bit this week about it was an inner journey and an outer journey. It has been, I actually am so pleased to be able to present him to you. And not only have I found that he is just an incredible teacher, wisdom holder, truth teller, but I can actually maybe loosely say he's also my friend. It's my pleasure and honor to introduce Dr. John Francis to you.
Thank you for being here, and I always start my talks by playing the banjo, gathering the spirit of the road and of the silence. That was called a life celebration, something that came from the silence, something that came from the road. The 22 years of walking and the 17 years of silence, and I started speaking, and I really wanted to talk about this, the idea of silence and how that happens in the real world. I mean, how do you how do you be silent for 17 years in a community? And I can look out in the audience and I can see some very familiar faces who knew me when I was speaking, when I came out to Point Reyes and started my life out here, and I was talking and jabbering away, and you know, like a lot of them were going, gee, would he ever just shut up? You know, I just know they were saying that. But I'm going to go back first to when I started speaking in Washington 17 years after I had been silent and had walked across the United States. And I spoke on Earth Day, the 20th anniversary of Earth Day 1990 in Washington, D.C. And the reason I wanted to speak, and I want to say this right up because I think it's so important, is because I had a message after walking for so long and after listening to so many people. I had started walking because of the environment. When I saw an oil spill in San Francisco Bay back in 1971. So many of you were probably here in 1971 and know that spill. And two oil tankers collided in the San Francisco Bay. And a lot of us went down to the shore and helped rescue birds and clean the beaches. And I was one of us. I went down and I looked, and it was so overwhelming. The smell actually was what really got me. And seeing the dying birds, I had an affinity for birds. As a young child, I used to save them out of, they fell out of the nest. And so I had this affinity. I tried to take care of them. But this was more than I could do, and so I gave up riding in cars. So back to where I started speaking. And so in Washington, D.C. on the 20th anniversary of Earth Day, because this was an environmental thing. And I studied environment walking across the United States. And in Oregon, I did my general studies. In Montana, I actually did a master's degree on environmental studies. And I wrote on my dissertation. It wasn't a dissertation. It was just a what they call a professional paper. And it was called Pilgrimage and Change, War, Peace, and Environment. And you could see how I was starting to think about what was going on in my life. And so by the time I got to Madison, Wisconsin, I did a PhD without speaking. And my family, they're all thinking I'm still crazy. But my dad was like, he was like, maybe he's not so crazy. You know, he's doing a PhD without talking. Back to Washington when I started speaking, you know, I started speaking because I got this education, a formal education and then an informal education, walking and listening to people. So I had something to say. I said, thank you for being here. This is my family had gathered to hear me speak, and my mother jumps up and she goes, hallelujah, Johnny is talking. You know, can you imagine not speaking to your mother for 17 years and then one day, you know, out your mouth? And I'll go back to that. I actually spoke to her before then. My dad said, that's one, because he always wanted me to drive in cars too. So he thought that, well, okay, I was talking now, but driving in cars, I needed to do that. So he said, that's one. And I had never heard myself speak in such a long time that I didn't recognize my voice. So when I said, thank you for being here, I turned around and looked, you know, to see who was behind me saying what I was thinking. And I said, oh, that's me. It's me. And I just started to chuckle. You know, I hear people watching me and I'm going, oh, that's really funny. And I could see my dad and he was going, yeah, he really is crazy. Look at him up there giggling and stuff. Well, I started not speaking in Inverness, California on my 27th birthday. I had already given up riding in cars, and people thought that was crazy enough because, you know, not riding in a car in California, especially if you live out in the countryside, you know, how are you going to get around? And I was going, well, you just walk, you know. And so I said that, you just walk. And people just stop and they would argue with me and, you know, they're, John, get in the car. Get in the car. I go, no, I'm not getting in the car. And I might have had a kind of a chip on my shoulder too. As an environmental chip. You know, I'm walking to save the environment. What are you doing? You know, it's like, and so there was like a, you know, that kind of chip there. I hope it's gone now because I flew here in a plane and you would say, you know, I got rid of that. But on my 27th birthday, I decided I was going to not speak because 27, and it's so funny because I was listening to the Beatles, come on, right? You know, everybody was listening to the Beatles, and they had this song that said, number nine, number nine, number nine. I said, wow, yeah, that's groovy, man. But wait a minute, that's three nines. And three nines is 27. And I knew I was in the numerology, right? I said, I got to do something really special on this birthday that's coming up. And I said, God, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to stop talking for one day. Yeah, I'm going to give my community a gift of my silence because I'm so good at doing this. You know, they call that shoveling something. I was good at that. And so 27 came. And I slept out on the mesa, and I woke up in the morning, and I didn't say anything. I went down to see my girlfriend. She was in the house, and right down in First Valley. And I went, she goes, oh, you're not talking for your birthday. That's really great, John. It's really great. I walked around town. I went to get my mail. I didn't say anything. Helen Giacomini, she looked at the Gambastiani, that's what her name, Helen Gambastiani. She looked for my mail and she gave me general delivery and she gave it to me and I smiled and she goes, what's the matter, John? Cat got your tongue? And I went, I use mime and she saw the cake and she saw the candles and she goes, oh, it's your birthday. Well, you have a great birthday, you know. So to say that the community didn't appreciate my silence and my gift is, you know, they did. They were very happy. And I was happy, too. I was like, wow, I've never done something like this before, to shut up on my own. I mean, people are telling me to shut up all the time. But would I do it? No. But now, here I am. I'm not speaking. I started learning something. The first thing I learned is that painfully I hadn't been listening to anyone because I thought I knew everything. How did that happen? I thought I knew everything, so when someone would say something to me, I would listen with this kind of funny ear that would go, do I know that? Or if I didn't know it, well, then I knew what the answer was. They were wrong. If I hadn't heard that before. And if I knew the right answer, I would stop listening to them and I'd be thinking of what I was going to say back. So that cut communication, that cut the listening. I didn't hear what they had to say. There were other ways of doing it. I thought I could say it better. I would just stop listening to them and start thinking of how can I say that better. Then I realized that something happened, something was going on, that if that's how I was listening, which was not listening, I had stopped learning. Because if someone said something new, I didn't want to hear it. If someone said something different, I didn't want to hear that. I had something else to say back. And so I realized that, wow, I stopped learning. Because if you're going to learn, you're going to hear things that are different. You're going to hear things that are new. And you're going to have to be open to those things. So I said, I better do this another day. And something else I learned about. I couldn't lie. I mean, I couldn't make stuff up and say things like I used to. Because I was trying to pretend to be somebody else or something else. I had to accept just who I was and where I was, and so did everybody else. Not everybody appreciated this. You know, I mean, you know, that there are a lot of people, like, for the first couple of days, they thought that was unique and fun. But after about a week of me not speaking, people started talking about, you know, John's not speaking, and so I'm tired of that. You know, I wish he would start speaking. Another week would go by. Another week went by. A month had gone by, and I wasn't saying anything. And I realized that people were getting upset. Some people were upset. Some people said, hey, it's great. Some people said, you know, it's the beginning of the Aquarian age. It's a sign. And some people said, no, John's just crazy. I wrote my parents. My mother wrote back and said, your dad's going to be out on the next plane. I didn't speak for, oh, I guess it was 10 years. And every year on my birthday, I asked myself, is it time to speak? 10 years. On the 10th year, I decided, you know, I should say something. I should say something because I don't want this to be something other than a breathing, living decision. And so on the 10th anniversary of my not speaking, I walked from Inverness to Inverness Park to see my friend George Lutey, who was a realtor. And I walked into George Lutey's and I said, and he, George is like old crusty George. He says, oh, John, you got, I'm darn. John, you know you're not going to speak. You'd never speak. You should be speaking anyway. And he gave me the phone. Go ahead. Go ahead. Call somebody. Hello? Mom? It's me. Come on, Dwayne. I know you. I know it's your. You know Johnny doesn't speak. Come on. No, Mom, it really is. It's Johnny. If it's Johnny, then you tell me something that only you and I know. I go back to a place where my mom came to California and visited in San Francisco. I met them in San Francisco, and I went to visit a friend who worked up on the fourth floor of a building in San Francisco. On the way back down, my mother looked at me. We were in the elevator together, and she said, you know, if you were really serious about this walking business, you wouldn't be riding in elevators either. Dad busted. My mom, man, she's like that. She was like, you know, I was riding elevators and escalators. Boy, that was my time. So that was the last elevator, and I would run over to the Civic Center and ride the escalator, but I couldn't do that anymore either. So people ask me, they say, well, John, you have all these people, or they come up to you and they get angry with you. They tell you, you know, you should start talking, or you should ride in cars. I spoke that day to my mother for about an hour, and I spoke to some other people as in Point Reyes Station. And one of the people that I spoke to was one of those people that gave me the hard time. I never thought it was a hard time, but it was Art Rogers was a photographer, and he was coming out of his studio above the Western, and he walked down to me, and he said, John, how are you doing? And I said, fine. And he looked at me and he goes, "Are you okay? Is something wrong?" And I went, "No." And he said, "Because I saw art today, and that's why this is on my mind." He said, "When you said fine, I realized what it was, what the point was, what not speaking was." He said, "Fine didn't really get it." He says, "Whenever I asked you before how you were, you went, I got it. It was so much. And it was, and you didn't even say anything. But fine just didn't get it." When I talked to George Lutie and I was talking to my mother on the phone, as soon as I said hello, tears rolled down his eyes. He started crying. And I realized how much I love the people who loved me enough to say, "We don't like that. You should do this. Or you should do that." And I would listen to them. Because it was really important that they told me that I heard what they said, and that they were like the test for me. They were like the wall for me. They would say, like, is this really serious? Are you really serious about this? Is this real? Because if it's real, I'm going to change you. If it's not real, I'm going to make you not do it. And so I appreciate these people that I never disliked them because they said, "John, you're crazy for doing what you're doing. John, that's nuts. That's nuts. How could you love someone? How could you not love them for being there for you so that you could know what you were doing was something that you really needed to do, that you really had to do?" And so I went all the way across the United States. I went all the way through schools and not speaking and taking exams and acting things out for my students and learning on a formal level. And on that informal level, learning from all of us on the road, learning from everyone who I had the opportunity to listen to. And I realized that my journey wasn't just my journey. It's all of our journeys. Because whatever you do, it's all of us. It affects all of us. And so when I got to the East Coast, I realized that environment was not just about saving the trees and the endangered species and the habitat. Yes, that's all part of it. But if people were part of the environment, it was about how we treated each other. That was our first opportunity to treat the environment in a sustainable way or even understand what we mean by sustainability. So environment to me became something about human rights and gender equality and economic equity and all the ways that we relate to each other. Because as we love and respect each other, it's going to be manifested in the physical environment around us. And so my dad, he said, "That's one." And if he were here today and he saw me here in California, he would say, "And that's two." So I want to stop right now and embrace you all in the journey that we're on together. Thank you.
Tell you a quick story. I'm on staff here, just part-time, and I was sitting in my office, and one day I heard somebody come in the front door. My office is very close to the front door in the admin building, and I heard somebody say, "Is Larry Yang here?" And he's a teacher who I know. Somebody came out and said, "Can I help you?" And I heard somebody say, "Is Larry Yang here?" And the person said, "No, he's not here." Let me see. And I knew that Larry wasn't teaching up the hill. So I came out of my office very quickly. And I went to say, to see if I could help, because I knew that Larry wasn't here. So I went in. I went out to the outside and into the lobby, and I said, "Hi, can I help you?" He says, "Yeah, I'm looking for Larry Yang." And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, he's not here. Who are you, basically?" And this lovely man put this great smile on his face. He said, "I'm John Francis. I was here to see Larry." And Christina mentioned that I'm in a teacher training program. It's 4 years. And one of our assignments was to read The Ragged Edge of Silence by John Francis. And I said, "Oh, you're John Francis. Come in my office. I have a million questions for you." And my first question was, "Brother, what are you doing? What did you do?"
Yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah, so that was my question. But what I want to do now is open up the questions to you so that John can share his experience and answer your questions that may be right now on your mind. Like, really? 17 years? 22 years? So we're going to open up the discussion right now so John can answer any questions you may have. So
try to.
I'll try to. Exactly, try to. Yeah. Hands are up.
Yeah. Someone's going to do all that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you would say your name, it'd be great.
Hi, my name is Melody, and I have two questions. They're not too long. The first one is, when you mentioned that you were going to go into silence, what is it about others sometimes where they just don't support your decision whether you stick to it or not? To say, "John, that's a wonderful idea. You know, I wish you well on your journey." And, oh, what was the second one? Why do people not support? And during that time, the second one, were there people that did say, "Go for it"?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so let me just repeat that for myself, and for those of you who, like me, I don't hear all that well, so I want to make sure I'm saying it right. That what was it that kept me going when people were not supportive, and then the other side was, what was it that, were there people who did support what I was doing?
Okay. Yeah. Yes, and what is it about others when someone makes a decision to do something that they find odd or unusual that they try and keep you from doing it or don't wish you well?
Yeah.
What is it about others when someone steps outside the tribe, so to speak, to do something different, to go search for fire, and they say, "Oh, no, we'll burn down our huts"?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what is it about others that they can't support your decision to do something different or unusual?
I think that the answer, there's probably several answers to that. And for some people, it's we signed an agreement. We haven't really signed an agreement, but it's like an agreement that you live in a community and we're all doing this thing and we're all going to behave in a certain way. And we kind of accept that. Or even in that sense that we accept that you're going to be able to be different, but within the certain boundaries, you'll be able to be different. And so you go to sleep, and you wake up in the morning, and you know, everything in your world is like this, and you get up in the morning, there's a mailman. Oh, there's a, you know, everything is in its place, and I'm okay. You know, and you get up one morning, and somebody's, you know, walking backwards. You know, and you go, "Oh, what the, you know, why are they doing that?" And it means that you have to figure out now what's going on when everything was already figured out for you. And so it's annoying. You know, it could be. And so I kind of got that I'm annoying people Because even when I just gave up riding in cars, there was I lived in a community where people used cars. And so there's a volleyball game over in Point Reyes Station. It's only 4 miles away. You get in your car, you drive over there in 5 minutes, and you're there playing volleyball. And so, John, you want to play volleyball? Yeah, I'm on my way. And I get there, and it's like the last volleyball game. And then I got to walk back. Or, John, do you want to go to the movies tonight? It's over in San Rafael. We're in Point Reyes, man. But yeah, I'm leaving tonight. Can we go tomorrow? I mean, all those things, we've agreed to all that stuff. So I can understand, really, you know, why people would be upset. And so in our changing, how we change things, it's not just my trip. You know, it's not like I'm doing this just in isolation. I'm doing this in community. And and so people are, you know, God, I have to think about that now. Where I have to think about, I'm the person, you know. But now somebody who didn't even want to think that, or he didn't want to go there, now they have to think about that. It's like, oh, God, to think about silence and not talking and not riding in cars. I don't want to do that, man. Come on. So that's I think that's a, and there's probably other answers to that as well.
Hi, this is Sarah. What made it overwhelmingly worth it for you to go 17 years without talking?
What made it overwhelmingly worth every day? Every day just made it the most amazing thing, exploration, experience, because I never in my imagination, well, you know, there was one time when I was thinking about being a Trappist monk. Until I found out that they didn't talk. I said, what? They don't talk. I mean, I like the robes, you know. I thought that was, they had these robes, man, they look cool, and it was all, you know. But they didn't speak. And I said, well, I don't think I could do that, that's for sure. And so I entered that vocation, you know. And then I found myself 20 years later walking around not talking and visiting Trappist monasteries. And the monk saying, can we go with you? Yeah. Did that answer that? I mean, it's just every day of the, and being, and I mean, taking Vipassana, you know, for 10 days or 17 days or whatever it is, it's like, why would you want to be silent? You know, it's like, oh, well, there's something going to come out of that. But just being in the world and being silent, I was just so amazed at the experience. And it was like, I'm that person. I had no idea, no clue that I could even do that. So every day was overwhelmingly just what was amazing to me.
Hello, I'm Jeremiah Jeffries. I want to know, how did your activism change? So you said you were an environmental activist before. How did you participate and continue to nurture that part of yourself, or did you let that go for a time?
Mm-hmm. Well, the activism started out as I'm going to give up riding in cars because it seemed you could see that, you know, oil spill, cars, and people would say to me, John, you're not riding in a car isn't going to make any difference. And I, like, argue with them because I thought, maybe they're right, you know. And eventually I just dropped the idea that I was going to, you know, stop oil spills from happening because I was walking. And I was so touched by the environment, like the trees and the environment we lived in here is like so beautiful and so powerful, and to be able to live in it and to be able to walk in it and to be able to listen to it was just overpowering. But then I found myself going to school and studying environment. And I went, oh, you can study environment? Because this was like in the 70s. And I think the oil spill in Santa Barbara, the blowout, is really what started the environmental movement. So there really wasn't a... and I say started the environmental movement was just what started Earth Day. The environmental movement's been going on forever, you know. And I went to school and I learned you could study the environment. And so I started studying and going to different schools to Montana, and I was doing a master's degree there in environmental studies. And then I went to Wisconsin. I was doing my PhD in studying oil spills, thinking that, well, this is the environment. But all that other stuff, all the roads, all the miles, all the people that brought me into their homes, that was what made me think that and feel and experience that the environment was really much more. And that if I was going to be an environmental activist, it was about everything. And that's the power of our action, is when we look at the environment through each other, make it human, and not just about saving the trees. And I mean, it is important to save the trees, but also let's love each other, let's take care of each other, let's be kind, let's be compassionate, because that's really the foundation of what our environment is about.
Hi, my name is Alex. Thank you for your stories, and especially the essential information about listening and the wisdom we can gain from listening. My question is, what do you do now? How do you follow up 17 years of silence? And do you ever wish to go back to that silent place in the world?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was going to say I tap dance, but I don't. I tap dance, but no. I do practice silence every morning, so I do sit, and I do play the music. I like to play music, so I keep that up. But I also have a family now. I'm married, and I have children, and one is 18 going off to college, so I have to be a dad. That's great, you know, I love that. And I'm writing, I'm actually writing a children's book on kindness, the history of kindness through the of the world, and it goes back to prehistoric times when anthropologists had found bones of people who have been buried, but they have like spina bifida and all kinds of other abnormalities that would normally prevent them from surviving in a hunter-gatherer civilization or culture or tribe. But they found these people to be, you know, lived to be 20 and 30 years old. So it means that in that time, people took care of them. People had compassion or thought that they had worth and really took care of them. And they had to do everything for them. So I'm not sure if they thought maybe they were deities and that was something that they needed to do. But that's amazing things. It's not written down. Then it comes down, we see written in history, and Ashoka and, you know, princes who came to, you know, work with the people, and what's that guy's name? Siddhartha. Yeah. you know, Buddha, who, who, yes. That's that guy's name. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm doing that, and I'm beginning and making a documentary on Planet Walker, and I'm putting online, making a curriculum for, they said K through 12, and into adult learners for walking in pilgrimage and using that pilgrimage, the model of a pilgrimage, for learning out in the world and learning real things that we need to know about. And so a lot of things, and I get to, you know, be here and speak with you. So I think I have the best of everything going on here right now.
Hi, I'm Scott. I'm curious, when you were in your darkest moments during those times, how did you get strength? What were the things that carried you through that?
Say that one more time so I can...
When you were in your darkest moments, when, like, really questioning what you're trying to do, where did you get the strength to carry on?
Yeah, darkest moments, right? Yeah. And I have one story in particular that I can tell. It was about coming down from Oregon, walking through Miranda in Northern California into the Redwoods there. And it was just pouring rain. And I mean, I hadn't been that wet since I'd been, you know, swimming. And I was like going, this sucks, you know. And I'm like on my way to Garberville, and I'm just freezing. And I come out of the Redwoods, and I look down, and I can see Garberville, and it's like, oh man, you should be down there with your clothes in one of the tumbler dryers, and that would be. There's a truck. Truck drivers always would stop and ask me if, you know, you need a lift, and I would always go. Well, this was such a time in my life. I don't know. I said, I'm giving up. I'm just going to get in that truck, and we're going to ride down into Garberville. And I didn't know whether I was going to start speaking. I was like, are you going to speak in the truck? What are you going to do? Are you going to keep walking or what? And I was like thinking, no, this is probably the end of what my journey's been. And so I walked up to the truck, right? And lights off, all of a sudden blink on and off, and I hear the and the truck kind of rumbles and grumbles, and it goes over the hill and down into, you know, Garberville. And I'm sitting there. There's the truck, you know. And I knew that I would have gotten in that truck. I knew that. Because I was ready to go and say, hey, will you help me? I'm going to... And the stars came out. It warmed up. I was still cold. But I slept out that night on the hill overlooking Garberville. And I realized something. I realized this something was bigger than me. That I was part of something bigger than me. That if it was up to me, little me, I might be in that truck going down the... But because of something bigger than me, something that I can't see, but I can feel it, I'm still on this journey. I'm still walking. Things like that have happened through... I mean, that's not the only time, you know. But I hope that answers your question. You.
So, Xerxes, so when I was a little kid growing up in Inverness, you were walking. So, what inspired you to leave Point Reyes in Inverness? Did you go to, when did that sense of purpose to go to start to learn through? How did that, what was the inspiration for you to leave West Marin?
That's a good question, Xerxes. This is because I brought my son, my youngest son, back. We had been in Hawaii at a school, and I was being there, teaching over there. And then when we came back, we stopped in Marin, and he saw where we lived. And I mean, he was born in California, so, but he can't remember it. Sam, who's a little older, remembers. And so we were here, and my son says, "And so, you and Mom lived here?" And I said, "Yeah, we lived here. This is where we lived." And I took him to the house. He lived in that house. And he goes, "Well, you guys must have been crazy to leave here." I said, "No." I said, "There's different things going on that you know that you see that you don't see." But what inspired me was when I learned how to walk. Not when I was a little kid and learned how to walk, but when I learned how to walk in Marin, I would walk from Inverness over to Point Reyes Station, and then I'd walk back. And then one day I'd walk over the hill. I walked up to Marshall first. And I learned what I needed or what I didn't need and how long it would take. And eventually I had to walk over the hill, and I'd walk back. And that learning to walk, I said, wow, I could just put all that walking in a straight line and I could go somewhere. And the first place I wanted to go was I wanted to go up to Oregon because I wanted to build a boat, and they had Port Orford cedar up in Oregon. I thought, I want to go to Port Orford and get some cedar. I was going to saw that down, and I was going to bring it back down with mules, right? And oh, I had a vision. And I went up to Port Orford, Oregon, and I met this guy, R.D., and he told me how to, you know, find the Port Orphans, but they were getting, he said, they're getting rare now because there's a disease coming up through the, so I had to hurry. And I was like, going, yeah, I got to hurry. And he gave me a saw. I got a saw, and I was like, ready to go do that. And then one of my friends who was from Point Reyes said to me, "John, why don't you just, if you're going to build a boat, you're going to take 50 years to build a boat with a mule." And he says, if you want to walk around the world, which is what I want, if you want to go travel around the world, just go. Just go. And I thought about that, and I said, huh. Well, after I finished school at Southern Oregon, I went down and apprenticed for a wooden boat, learned how to build wooden boats. But I took the skill with me, so that I could do wooden work on boats along the way. And I just put that walking in back and forth into a straight line. And it found myself all the way on the other side of the country and the length of South America. So it was that's what inspired me, to learn from being on the road. Yeah, and to be on pilgrimage. That was to be on a journey. But I'm back. Yeah. And I always would think of, you know, people would say to me from Point Reyes, "Well, where are you going?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to move the family to New Jersey because that's where my family home was." And they said, "Oh, New Jersey." And I said, "No, it's like West Marin, West Cape May, and it's just the other side of here, because we're always here." And they just looked at me and said, "John, that's too zen."
Grant, as you talk, I have a lot of questions. I'm sure everybody does here. But I'll ask one, and that is, how do you keep from being cynical about the environment, given what you see happening?
That's a good question. And I take that with me. I mean, I believe that how we treat each other is what's going to manifest in the physical environment. And it begins with all of us, you know. And so that's what I do. That's my practice, is to understand that and then act accordingly. to treat each other with the way that involves being compassionate and loving and respectful.
Hi, I'm Evelyn. I know there isn't a simple answer to this question, but I'm wondering how your years of silence changed you.
How have my years of silence changed me? Well, I try to listen to everyone, and I think that I'm still being changed by the silence. That I get up in the morning and that I'm looking to get back to that place, looking to be in silence. And so I think that it's really helped me be who I am and accept who I am and not try to pretend to be someone else. So the silence has changed me in the sense that it let me rediscover who I was and who I am. Before, I was pretending to be so many people as an African-American person in the world. I tried to pretend to not be who I was and to be accepted by everyone. And so to do that, I had to pretend to be different people for different groups of people. And being silent said, okay, you can't do that anymore. You just have to accept who you are, and people have to accept who you are. So in that sense, it helped me discover who I am.
My name's Michael. Oh, it's on. Anyway, John, thank you. My question is, was there divine intervention for you on your journey? Were you speaking to God, or were you speaking to your higher self? Was it coming from your heart or just an intuitive spirit?
Yeah. Where does it, who am I speaking to, and what do I see, or what do I hear? Yeah. Okay. Yes. Well, I'll tell you. And when I stopped riding in cars first, and it was really an amazing time. It was an amazing thing that happened. I was walking, and I could feel nature. But when I stopped speaking, it was like some switch had gone on, and I got higher than I could ever have imagined. I was like just walking around in euphoria. And what would come to my mind was like this was an image of Mr. Natural. You know, Mr. Natural was walking and he was getting high on the natch. And I was going, oh, that's it. That's what it's about. Oh, wow. And so who I talked to or who I heard, like I heard nature, I hear nature, but it's what's invisible. It's what's not said. It's not, you know, the words like, well, this is, he said, go down and, oh, no, I don't hear those words. You know, it's what I hear and what I see is invisible. And it is silence. I hope that answers it. Tried it. Thank you.
So we've got time for... I'm going to turn this on again. And we've got time for just one more, and then we're going to be settling into a closing.
I hope, you know, everybody can email me, right?
Yes.
They'll know where I am. Okay, so good. Okay. So if you didn't get a chance to ask a question, we can connect.
My name is Heather, and I'm so glad that I came tonight. This has been a real treat. And I'm curious, with all your silence, if you clearly became a better listener, and I'm wondering if you could give me some tips on how to be a better listener.
Mm. Well, I did write this book called The Ragged Edge of Silence. And there's some tips there. You know, there's some tips. But I would say start off just slowly and be gentle with yourself. You know, each morning, make it part of your practice. You know, just listening. Just start, you know, not... Just start listening, you know, and maybe 5 minutes, maybe just a couple of minutes, you know, and then make that a little longer. And, you know, Noli, she had a wonderful way of leading us into a meditation. And so I think that opportunities like this to come and be able to sit and be with people that are on the same journey it's a great opportunity. It's a great gift.
John, Francis, thank you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, your stories, your humor. Quite a storyteller, right? He had come to our People of Color retreat, and I was speaking with someone today, and they said his stories were exquisite, but it was the pauses in his stories that really resonated. So thank you for your inner and outer journey. It is definitely a reflection for all of us, and it's something that we can take with us as we leave this room. But for now, let's settle into our closing. Let's just find a moment to just lower our eyes or close our eyes, taking in the beauty of these words and the lessons that we can take from them. Whether you choose silence or walking, we are all on a path, the path of a wholesome life, the path of compassion. The path of looking at our environment, our inner and outer environment. Feeling into the earth that meets our feet, caring for all that are around us. So I dedicate the merit of our evening today and our practice to that goodness. To being one and not separate with all beings. May all beings in all directions, two-legged, four-legged, winged and gilled, all beings find peace, be safe, and find freedom. Thank you all for coming and your kind attention. It's just been a real pleasure to be here with you. Drive safely home. Or walk.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.